Peace, peace, beautiful beings, and welcome to another episode of the Mental Health is Sexy podcast with Coach V from the 513. If this is your first time tuning into this podcast, welcome. This is a new venture in the labor and love as I am on my personal mission to change the narrative around mental health by sharing my signature message that mental health is sexy. That means I am on a personal, God-driven mission to change how we talk about mental health, to change how we treat mental health, and to change when we talk about mental health. Mental health is such an important idea, concept, way of life that it's something that should be talked about and embraced just as regularly as we talk about what's for dinner or what we did over the weekend or what's your plans for your birthday. I myself am a holistic mental health and healing coach, a national speaker, talk show host, and now a podcast host. And probably most importantly, I am a victor over manic depression. Yes, in 2005, after my dad passed unexpectedly, I was diagnosed by the doctors at UC, located in Cincinnati, Ohio, as being manic depressive. Now, I knew that wasn't my issue, but who was I to tell these people with years and years of experience and these pieces of paper on the wall with these seals to say that they are doctors in their respective field and who've taken all these tests and learned all these theories. Who was I to tell these people that they didn't know what they was talking about? Who was I to tell these people, I don't need that Zoloft? Who was I to tell these people, I don't need to come and talk to you twice a month and run up my insurance where I'm leading the conversation because you ain't telling me what I need to know. Who was I to say that? So I listened to what they said in public, when in private, my spirit told me even back then, sis, this ain't for you. But I wasn't aware enough to articulate that I was hurting and that I needed help on how not to hurt so bad. I wasn't aware enough within myself to articulate that, okay, I don't need this medicine and these therapy sessions, but I know something's off. I need help with learning how to cope. I need help with learning how to love myself. I need help with learning that when people reject me, I'm too much for them. There's nothing bad about me or horrible about me. My light's just too bright for them. I did not know back then how to articulate those things. So I ended up continuing to suffer in silence. If you haven't already, do me a favor and go back and listen to the beginning of this podcast. Because my intent is for each episode to build upon the prior. So I don't want nobody to be confused when they jump in on one of the latter episodes. Like, wait, man, huh? What's she talking about? So what we're going to do today is continue from the childhood trauma part two. I shared in two different sections about how my childhood was, how I knew something was different about me, how I knew that cutting myself wasn't correct, but that's what I chose to do, how I was discovered, how my mom reacted. So now we're going to talk about when I turned 18 and I moved out on my own, graduated from one of the best high schools, not just only in the city of Cincinnati, but in the country. Shout out to Walnut Hills High School. And so academically, socially, intellectually, I was smart. I was in the top percentile. But mentally, emotionally, I knew something was lacking. I knew something was off, so to speak. I'm doing air quotes that y'all can't see, right? Because I'm so a big talker of my hand with my hands type of person. So my cutting didn't go away. It was just dormant for 2 years. And when I moved out on my own and started to experience life, meaning being raised as a very strict Jehovah's Witness, I did not get to enjoy or experience excuse me, or check out a lot of the high school experience, whether it was dances, whether it was parties, whether it was extracurricular activities. I didn't get to do any of that. So it's just like a spring. If you hold a spring in your hand too tight and press it down tightly with both hands, once you release that spring, once that pressure is off of that spring, what does that spring do? It bounces all over the place until it runs out of the momentum to continue to bounce. But because you held that spring so freaking tight and in one position, soon as it gets its freedom, it takes off. That's what I did. So when I turned 18, I moved out, excuse me, and started experiencing life. So I started to hang out with older people, men and women. You know, very rarely hung out with people my age, very rarely. Always hung out with older people that partied and that smoke and that drank and that had tattoos and had piercings and dressed nice and listened to cool music. I said, okay, what was I missing? So what had happened was when I first moved out, I started getting tattoos and piercings. And not because I was going through this, excuse me, not because I was going through this grunge phase of, you know, just wanting to be pierced up and tatted up and look intimidating, simply because I thought they were beautiful. And I did not understand why it was such a sin, I'm doing air quotes again, to get a tattoo. So the first tattoo I got was a very intimate tattoo, because even though I was an adult, and according to the laws for the state of Ohio, in my mind, I was so what I would call mentally and emotionally and religiously oppressed that I still was afraid of disappointing my mother or disappointing any other members of the religion that I may have came across. I was still still afraid of disappointing them. And, you know, being older, I feel comfortable in saying that I know the religion I was raised in is not the only religion that has very strict rules and guidelines. So anyone coming up in any different religion can feel stifled or can feel like they're missing out on things if it's constantly presented as this is bad, don't do this, this is bad, don't do this, this is why. And then they hang over a religious belief over your head or reward versus explaining to you or showing you or giving you guidance on why this particular path, excuse me, may not be the best one for you. And I hope that came out as clearly to you guys as it was in my head. So all the things, it was kind of like a you do this or don't do this because I said so versus an open platform of having a healthy conversation of question and explanation. I was in the type of household where you do not question. You do what I say. Even if you see me do something different, you do what I say. What happens in this house stays in this house, period, point blank. And a lot of people who came from the community that I came from, meaning the African-American community, were raised in that manner, regardless of their religious belief. They were raised in that manner. So my mother, being from the South, brought, of course, Southern tenets here to Cincinnati with her. So when my sister and I were born, you know, even though we were here in Cincinnati, we came up on a lot of Southern upbringing. And a lot of those tenets that were instilled in me, I still use to this day. Not that we're going in this house, don't say nothing, but just how to treat my husband, you know, the roles and responsibilities that will help for an easier flow in the household, the examples I set, the cooking, the cleaning. I have no problem with doing those things because I'm not identified by those behaviors. You know, I don't think this is only for women. You know, I just enjoy doing those things. I love taking care of my family. So before I go too far off on that, I just wanted to share with you that any religion, Jehovah's Witness, whatever, any religion, if you press too hard upon the children, or even adults who are just coming into the religion, well, I'll say the children, because adults who are just coming in has already experienced another life experience. But children, if they were raised in a religion and compressed hard, usually when they get that freedom, they're going to go out and experiment and try things and do things. Now, I never smoked or did any drugs. That was not my thing. I did sample alcohol. Even to this day, I'm not a big drinker. I just personally don't like the taste of it. I don't like the effects that I see people go through when they drink. And it could be too residual, because my dad was an alcoholic. So they say when you grow up in something, you got two ways of going. You either follow in that footsteps or you stay far, far away from it because you were traumatized by it as a child. In my case, I'm pretty sure that's an underlying subconscious foundational reason as to why I'm not a big drinker to this day. But I hung out with people who drank. I hung out with people who smoked, who sold drugs, did drugs, had tattoos. So when I got my first tattoo, as I mentioned, I put it in a very intimate space because I wanted the thrill of seeing what tattoos were about. But then I didn't want to disappoint my mother or any other people who were raised or who are part of the Jehovah's Witness organization. So my very first tattoo was on my private parts, right? So I'm sitting in a tattoo parlor. It was a woman tattoo artist. I was shaved and the deodorant was ran across the skin. I can't remember what the reason is for that, but they do that for something. And shaved, and I was tattooed. So I'm laid out in this tattoo chair with this divider, spread eagle, and this lady is tattooing my special places. And I remember watching a porno that had a lady who had a tiger's face tattooed down there. And I thought that was so cool. So again, I didn't get to do the typical things that teenagers experience in their teenage life. So between the years of 18 and 19, like that whole 365 days, I was lit, as the kids would say today. I was lit. I wanted to see stuff, do stuff, try out stuff. But I was so clear that if I didn't like it, I didn't like it. So it really wasn't about me trying and experimenting things to be fit or to be hip and to look cool with the cool kids. It was really for me. I wanted to see what I was missing. And one of those things that I watched or indulged in was watching pornos. So, and me watching that porno and seeing that lady tattooed, I was like, wow, you can do that? Right? Like, oh my gosh. So it wasn't even about watching the porno for the reasons that people watch pornos. It was really about me learning and figuring out what I've been missing. Like, real talk, true story, I wanted to know what I was missing. Why was everything so taboo? You know, what do other people look like? What do other people do? How am I supposed to behave when I'm in an intimate situation with a man? Like, what am I supposed to do? You know, how, what's popping in the streets? Like, so it was research, right? But when I saw that lady's tattoo, I was enamored with the idea, like, oh, I want to do that. I want to do that too. So my very first tattoo was a tattoo down there. One of the things I also indulged in at 18 was dancing, being an exotic dancer. And it wasn't an idea I had on my own. It was an idea that a friend at the time sprung upon me, because even as a child, I was a dancer. I would learn all the new dances. One of my aunts always made sure in one of those townhomes in English Woods. So shout out to E-Dub. They tore it down, but I never lived in English Woods, but my aunts and my grandmother stayed in English Woods. So whenever my mother would work That's who the babysitters were. So shout out to E-Dub. Shout out to Heath Court. Shout out to Sutter Avenue. Shout out to The New, which was in the back bottom part of English Woods. I don't know if they're still up, but I know the front part is right off of Westwood Northern Boulevard is torn down. But those were my, and I'm smiling if y'all can't tell, those were my stomping grounds. Those were, you know, I would go to the community center in the center in the summertime and get free lunches and go play my grandmother's numbers at the store that was in the center of the community and go to the candy lady and swing on the handrails and get stung by bees and chased by boys. I used to wrestle boys in my grandmother's yard. Play on the jungle gyms. I mean, those were some really, really integral moments of my childhood that I can look back and remember. So I'm saying all that to say, I promise all my story has a point, but I'm saying that to say, I felt so stifled in my childhood that when I became an adult, I did whatever. And back to the dancing as a child, we used to stand out in the little park area and dance, have dance competitions. Every holiday we go to my grandmother's home. My aunt would teach me all the new dances. So I'm bringing that up to speed to say I've always danced. That's my thing. So going out to parties and hanging out with people, inevitably some of the men in the group noticed, hey, she can dance. Like she can real life dance. So I was approached with the idea of being an exotic dancer. So me just saying yes to everything at least once just to see what I was missing, I said, yeah, let's do it. So I had an idea of what exotic dancers did from pornos and from movies that people would show me. And so that's how I had my first experience with what a stripper was or what an exotic dancer was or what the difference between the two was, et cetera, et cetera. And it looked exciting to me. So again, between 18 and 19, I was saying yes to everything, to try everything once. And I don't mean everything like everything, because again, I've never did drugs or injected things or, you know, so I never did things like that. But the things that I felt that wouldn't harm me, that I would just be able to say, yeah, I tried it, I didn't like it, those are the things that I did. So exotic dancing and tattooing kind of fell together in that whole first 6 months of me being out on my own. And I noticed when I had the tattoo, it was something that was interesting to people when I would dance. So I learned the word aphrodisiac, which played into the tattoo that I got. So at the time, my original dancing name was Lady Aphrodisiac, right? So just as a hint, that's part of my tattoo. And I started to use that tattoo as a teaser in my dance routine. Then I started to notice how much attention I got because I spoke proper and dignified on the streets. And then I had this part of me that just cut loose and turned up. And, you know, it was just such polar opposites, but it was all me. And that was my shtick. You know, that was the thing that made me the most money. I started to run into people who would see me during the day at my job, and I would invite them out to come to this party or come to this dance thing, and then they would bring people with them. So I was dipping in both categories. I was making a lot of money as a commissioned. I think I had an hourly rate as well, but hourly plus commission cell phone salesperson, and then, you know, dancing on the weekends. And on top of that, I was a full-time student in college. So I was getting refund checks. So money wasn't the goal. The money just came automatically. But those three aspects of my life, I realize now as an adult, those were the things I used to stay busy and to keep me from putting myself in situations where I got hurt to the point where I felt like I needed to cut on myself, if that makes sense. So they were distractions, if you want to say that. So after I got my first tattoo and I didn't die from it, from the pain, like everybody was telling me, I said, wow, maybe this could be a way to distract me when I'm hurt. So if I'm not in school, if I'm not at work, if I'm not dancing and some sucker dude that I've given the time of day hurts me, I need to release that energy. So instead of me hurting myself, I'll go, quote unquote, and allow someone else to hurt me, if that makes sense. So for years, every time I felt that my heart was being broken or my soul was being crushed, I would go get another tattoo. So serious. For years, when I started to find out about how cool piercings were, if someone hurt me, broke my heart, didn't care, stomped on it, I would go get a new piercing. I did this for years in an effort to not harm myself. So even sharing this story, sharing my truth today with you all, I still believe that had I had a mentor, had I had a coach, had I had someone in my space who truly saw the greatness in me that could guide me and help me on dealing and coping with life, I feel truly that I would have been saved earlier. See, I never felt I had a mental illness. I knew that the behaviors I was doing and cutting myself weren't the business. But I didn't know how to stop. And I didn't know how to stop because that's how I relieved temporarily the pain that I was feeling from someone hurting me. So which in turn mean I didn't know how to deal with the choices I was making in life with choosing some losers to give my time and attention and energy to, right? So of course, there was a point where my finances, I wasn't being as responsible as I should. So what happened is when I did not have the money to spare to go get a tattoo or to get a piercing, guess what I did when I was hurt? I went back to what I know, to what I knew, and that was to harm myself. That was to find a knife and cut. That's how that got started again. But because I remember the extreme reaction my mother had at 16, I said, well, now I'm an adult. Now I'm out here in these streets doing these fancy things. And I don't want to stop my money. I don't want people to judge me. I don't want to hear that I'm crazy. I don't want to hear I'm going to be placed in a white jacket and my arms strapped down. I'm going to be in a padded room and I'm going to be slobbing and they're going to inject me with all this medicine to keep me calm. You know, that was traumatic for me to hear from my mother when all I wanted was her attention, her love, her guidance. But again, I was not in the space to articulate that, or I didn't feel comfortable in articulating that. But that stuck with me. That was traumatic. So what I did is I began to cut myself in a place that's not easily viewed. That was my thigh. And what I did when I danced, I would wear costumes or clothing that would cover my thighs, plural, or just that one thigh. I began to get really creative so that I didn't stop my money. So then I learned too from my first cutting episode at 16 on my arm, how deep to cut, or not to cut, I should say, because I never honestly wanted to die in those moments. It just became a habit of mine to relieve whatever emotional and mental pain I was experiencing by cutting myself. I never wanted my freedom compromised. So it was never a thing of going after the person who hurt me. It was just, I wanted my pain to stop. And I found out a way to do that by shifting my attention from my heart being broken to, okay, let me patch myself up. So it was kind of a weird distraction and then let me save myself type of routine I got in. So again, I'm clear present day how my actions communicated to others that I was suffering from a mental illness. I'm just offering today in hindsight that I was crying out for help. I was crying out for support. I was crying out for attention, for growth, for mentorship, for a coach, for simply love. I wanted someone to genuinely love me. I even remember that I started developing a sentence that I started saying for years with whatever guy I was dating. I wish I could cut my chest open and show you my heart. I wish you could see how I feel on the inside. I wish you could see how much you're hurting me. I wish you could see how much I love you. I wish you could see how honest I'm being with you. I wish you could see this because in my mind, if that person who was hurting or oppressing me at the time could see on my heart how much damage they were doing while simultaneously seeing how much I love them, in my mind, I would think they would stop and they would love me and treat me how I needed to be treated. So I'm sharing all of this with you all to say, I clearly understand how my behaviors were demonstrating a mental illness. But I'm telling you, because this is my story, I wanted to be loved. I wanted to be loved as much and as hard as I loved others. And that can't be fixed with Zoloft. That can't be fixed with therapy, talking about why I cut myself. What am I going to do the next time instead of cutting myself? That can't be fixed with being on a 72-hour hold when I know that I'm hurting inside, but I'm sharing a room with someone who's eating paint chips off the wall or who's screaming in terror or who's having hallucinations. And then I don't know what their people are called. The orderlies are running in and five people holding them down and one nurse is stabbing a big needle in their arm, just like you see in the movies. Like, I knew that was not my place. But I also understand now, looking back, how my behaviors demonstrated to people in that field that, oh, she needs to be committed. So again, the purpose of this podcast is to change the narrative around mental health. I very rarely use or focus on the term mental illness because I'd rather focus on mental health. Mental illness has been so stigmatized, and it's a quick write off label excuse when people behave against the norm. I'm just offering that some people like me fell through the cracks and did not know how to ask for help or didn't have people around them in tune enough to understand that there's something else going on. I know the behavior she's doing, but let's figure out why she's doing it. Let's talk to her. Let's love on her. And I had to go through a process of forgiving everyone in my space who did not help me. Because there was a process, a part of my life where I was angry at everyone for not seeing that I needed help. I was angry at the people who called me crazy. I was angry at the people who said, you're being stupid. I was angry at the people who said, how can you be so pretty and so smart and have everything going for you? You do something so foolish to yourself. You know, what if you cut too deep? What if you bleed out? I understand now as an adult, as a conscious woman, that that was their way of expressing concern, that they real life did not know how to help me, that I intimidated them. They did not know how to help me. They were afraid of me. They did not know how to help me because they were going through their own challenges and struggles in life, and they didn't have the answers for themselves. So there was a process of my awakening that I had to go through, a forgiveness of everyone. My mom was first and foremost. And it was like after I forgave my mom, everybody else was easy to forgive. So again, the purpose of this podcast is to change the narrative around mental health, what it looks like, how we treat it, and the situations that we talk about it. And I can definitely tell you that back then at 18, between 18 and 19, when I began to cut on myself again, when I didn't have the money to let someone else harm me by giving me a tattoo or a piercing, that I was crying out for help. Yeah, I did wanted to see what tattoos were about and piercings and how I looked with a ring in my eyebrow or a ring in my tongue. I wanted to see that. But the foundational reason behind why I was doing those things was because it was a distraction from me harming myself. It was more sociably acceptable to allow someone else to hurt me in exchange for cash, meaning with the tattoo or with the piercing, than it was sociably acceptable for me to save my money and go home and harm myself. You feel me? Like, think about that. Think about if every time you looked at someone who had a tattoo, you thought, wow, I wonder why they got that tattoo. Is it because they definitely want to honor their family? Or is it because it's a way for them to stop themselves from hurting themselves, from cutting themselves, from killing themselves? That's what my reason was. Again, I was never suicidal, but it was nothing for me to grab a knife and harm myself. And I hid and did that practice for years. And then for years, I would not wear a short skirt or would wear shorts because I did not want to be questioned about my cuts. Or I did not want people close to me to see that there's a fresh cut there. We're going to continue this story on another episode. I hope I've given y'all something to think about, some insight. And if you have any questions about this episode or any of the prior episodes, feel free to send me an email at bookcoachv@gmail.com. So V is spelled V as in Victor, two E's like elephant. So not the letter V, you have to spell V, V-E-E, bookcoachv@gmail.com. In the subject line, please put question for podcast or idea for podcast so that I will see the email and answer it on an upcoming episode. Woo! This was an intense episode today. This was intense for me. This is therapeutic because I'm sharing my truth with you all in an effort to help you recognize the signs of someone who needs help with their mental health, who are struggling or going through something, and not to write them off as mentally ill because of the stigma and the negative connotation that that phrase comes with. We're all struggling or suffering from something. And sometimes we are not aware enough to ask for the help that we should be asking for. But we're leaving clues and breadcrumbs to those around us to show that we need some help with something. So don't write us off. Don't judge us as being mentally ill. Stay away from them. Don't say things like, oh, you're off your meds. That's insensitive. That's keeping the stigma and the negative connotation going. And even though I don't currently practice these behaviors, I still say we when I speak about the community, because I'm always going to be a part of the community. As a victor over manic depression, as a victor over self-mutilation, it is what it is. But we're going to get deep on this podcast, y'all. We're going to get deep because it's my divine commission to help heal the masses. And I know that everything I've been through, everything I've experienced, I know that my story is definitely happened to me for a reason. I was built for it. It was already written for me to come out on the other side victorious so that I can go back and give back and help those who are currently in that position and struggling. All right, y'all. I think I've given y'all enough for today. Thank y'all so much for listening and for tuning in. Remember, this is the Mental Health is Sexy podcast with Coach V from the 513. I am on a personal, divinely commissioned mission to change the narrative around mental health, meaning how it's talked about, how it's treated, and the situations in which we discuss it, by sharing my signature message that mental health is sexy. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast or any feedback, email me at bookcoachv@gmail.com. V is spelled V-E-E, bookcoachv. coachv@gmail.com. Put in the subject line question for podcast or idea for podcast. And if you know anyone who would like to sponsor this podcast, they may email me at bookcoachv@gmail.com and put in the subject line sponsor for podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Spotify, on Anchor. I hear right now that this podcast is available on 7 platforms, and I don't know them all, so let me know where you're listening from. And I will see y'all on the next episode. Remember my favorite scriptures, Romans 12:2, be ye not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. And that's what we're here to do, renew our minds. Thank y'all for tuning in. Peace and love. Mwah.